This is ESPN Radio.
They can't keep getting away with this. Candy Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We got a lot coming up on a Football Monday today. We'll talk to Tyler Foljam, our ESPN betting analyst, Mina Kimes, as we do a wellness check on ESPN's foremost Seahawks fan, and talk to Jordan Renan about the Giants and the Tampa Bay Bucks coming up in Monday Night Football. Chris, we also get to talk to Dave McMenamin because I don't know if you saw LeBron's elbow or fist ended up bloodying some young man's face, and now that young man has to pay $950,000 to the league.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like it's necessarily fair, but as ugly as that scene was, I'm not quite sure it was as ugly as what happened at TD Garden on Friday night with my Lakers because they got a beatdown from the hands of the Boston Celtics, and that was not good at all. So, I mean, good on the Lakers for finding a way to win a game against the Detroit Pistons, even though you were down by 15 points late in the second half. But, yeah, I don't feel good about any of that right now. So let's just focus on what happened in the Week 11 slate in the NFL.
Yeah, this feels very don't mind the man behind the curtain as we assess the Lakers situation right now. But, Chris, you're right. We can leave the Lakers on the shelf for right now because we have a lot of time there. We don't have as much time in the NFL. And that's especially because we don't know who's good still. I know this like has been the running bit of the year so far in the NFL, but we had another one of those weekends where everything went completely haywire. I saw this from Adam Schefter, and I think this is the perfect context for the weekend that we had, Chris. With wins today from the Texans, Colts, and Vikings, there were now 11 wins since Week 9 from a team with a 500 or below winning percentage against division leaders. The most such wins to occur during weeks 9 through 11 of a single season since 1970. We have had as much parity, chaos, or what have you as ever, and so now all of a sudden we look up and we wonder this usually about the AFC, but now, Chris, after the Dallas Cowboys got dropped by the Kansas City Chiefs, we feel like we're asking a lot of those same questions on the other side of the aisle.
No, I think that's fair, but in the case of the Cowboys yesterday, you can understand why they lost that game, right? They had a lot of turnovers, and a lot of those turnovers were forced because the defensive front for the Kansas City Chiefs was able to get after Dak Prescott pretty good. Five sacks on him, they forced three turnovers. Like, that was the Kansas City Chiefs defense, and Frank Clark and Chris Jones in particular, like, those guys stepping up and playing according to their pay scale. Like, they looked like $20-plus million-a-year players yesterday in that game. They were able to dominate from the beginning snap to the end of it, and ultimately that was the difference. The Cowboys weren't able to take advantage of the miscues from the Chiefs, and the Chiefs were able to take advantage of what the Cowboys did wrong. Like, Dallas was able to force two turnovers, but they only amounted to 3 points. So ultimately, that was more about the Chiefs' defense being able to steal those possessions, being able to affect Dak Prescott, and then Kansas City's offense just doing enough in order to take advantage of that and end up being on the winning side of it.
Yeah, Chris, is it fair to say that these two teams appear really similar right now? Because, like, looking at the way they played this weekend, it is certainly, we talked about this for Dallas at the beginning of the season, it's the Kansas City formula from their Super Bowl year, right? Because that Dallas defense on the other side still found a way to eat. Micah Parsons has been, once again, lethal off the edge going towards the quarterback. And so it just feels like Dallas was the unhealthier team this weekend. You go into that game, no Amari Cooper. CeeDee Lamb leaves early with a concussion in that game and is not able to help you out in an already shorthanded crew. You're down Tyron Smith, your all-world left tackle. Ezekiel Elliott even had to leave the game for a little bit during he got banged up. So it just seemed like, Chris, Dallas was beat up in some critical areas, and Kansas City took advantage of it.
No question about it. And then speaking to the struggles that the Cowboys had in the passing game, I mean, Dak Prescott had Amari Cooper and had CeeDee Lamb for the most part during the preparation of the week. And then all of a sudden you get into the second quarter and you don't have either guy. Like, that's a problem in terms of, you know, trying to make adjustments on the fly and working with a lot of new guys and not necessarily having the chemistry, having the rapport, having the familiarity with the game plan and what Dak actually wants those guys to do when facing certain coverage looks. So I think that was a learning curve that was a little bit too steep for the pass catchers for the Cowboys. And now you're talking about them being on a short week in a game at home in Jerry's World against the Vegas Raiders, who's a desperate outfit, and they're trying to find a win. So it's not necessarily – the Cowboys aren't necessarily in the best of spots, but the one saving grace that they have is that they do play in the NFC East, and there's really only one other team in that division that can even think about having playoff aspirations. So I think in the long term they'll be fine, but in the short term they got some things that they got to worry about, and I think they got some reasons why they ended up coming up short yesterday in Arrowhead. Like, it's easy for me to explain why the dominant – Cowboys offense wasn't dominant yesterday. I can understand it because the missing pieces that we're talking about are integral parts of that offense when you look at CeeDee Lamb, Coop, and Tyron Smith.
Yeah, missing pieces aside, though, Dak Prescott, Cowboys star quarterback, still said it starts with him after the game.
Sucks, but I'll tell you, we're a confident group, and the defense did plenty enough for us to come and win this game. And so the offense didn't get the job done. That starts with me, and it starts with the way that we communicated and executed. So I've got a lot of confidence in this group, and as I said, we're a resilient group that will get better. So there's no worries or no discouragement on what our future holds. So as I said, we just got to learn from this and make sure that we take advantage of an opportunity on the road against a great team like this the next time.
Kanny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We want to hear from you. Be a part of Kanny and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Hit us up at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. College football season's heating up and the fans are hype. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And Chris, I don't really feel all that panicked. Like, I know we like to come in here and do the, you know, is there a blueprint now to stop the Cowboys, or are we concerned? Like, I'm not really all that concerned for them. Like, if this team gets healthy, especially up front, we know any piece being removed from that Cowboys offensive line seems to really sink productivity in a way that is unique, I think, to that group. And so if they get healthy up front and they get their guys back, this can be as good as any team in football. But like most teams in the NFL and like most seasons in the NFL, attrition is going to matter more than anything else, especially in a year with this much parity.
There's no question about it. But the one thing that Dallas can do to help that offensive line, especially when they have moving parts and their guys out of the lineup, be a little more balanced on offense. Like, I thought Troy Aikman was going to blow a gasket yesterday because it was clear that Kellen Moore got away from the run game. Anytime you throw the ball three times as much as you run the ball when you have Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott in the backfield, that's a problem. And I didn't feel like the complexion of the game got to a point where it dictated that Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy had to be as pass happy as they were. I thought they should have been a little more patient with staying with the running game and see if they can get some gains there, because their defense was doing a good job of keeping them in it and giving them opportunities. So them getting away from that, I thought, put the offensive line in a compromising position. I mean, offensive linemen, and you know this, Mike, because you played the position for a really long time at a high level. Like, you go forward. Yeah, like, the offensive linemen do a lot better job going forward than they do going backwards. So I just feel like you had an opportunity to be the aggressors, and you didn't take advantage of it against that Kansas City Chiefs defense in a game where it wasn't going to be high scoring. And I thought that was a real miss by the coaching staff of the Dallas Cowboys. That's something that when they look at the tape last night or this morning, they probably lament, they probably regret, because I feel like there's opportunities against that Kansas City Chiefs front in order to run the football.
Yeah, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. You're right, Chris. It's a situation where, as much as anything, you need confidence boosters. You need chances to be physical, especially when you got backups in there that are having a tough time. Like, yes, Chris Jones beat everyone up there. Beat Zach Martin on the right side, who is the best offensive lineman on that team and on that squad. So it was best on best, and he was still getting wins. But we saw Terrence Steele having trouble with their off-speed pitch and Frank Clark on the edge. When you've got resources you got to spend towards the middle, that's an issue. Like, ultimately in this situation, you got to be able to give them some relief in these certain spots here. And I know the Chiefs defense has looked better overall. In the last 4 weeks, they are second in points per game allowed. They are second in rush yards per game allowed and sixth in yards per game. Like, it has been an improved unit now that they have let Chris Jones go back to his natural position inside as an interior rusher. And Chris, you can speak to that, like the different world that he lives in, rushing against guards and interior linemen versus having to go against tackles, has clearly shown up in the last few games.
No question about it. I mean, Chris Jones is more comfortable playing on the outside shoulder of the guard than he is playing on the outside shoulder of the tackle or being lined up against the tight end. Like, there's just a lot less space. And for him, he's used to being in those close quarters, but he's so much more of a better athlete against the competition on the interior guys, right? When you start talking about the most athletic of offensive linemen, it usually has, you know, you're usually talking about the tackles on the edges. But with Chris Jones, when he's matched up against centers and guards, you know, he can be in a position where he out-athletes a lot of those guys, and then you blend that with his ability to use power as well, and it becomes too much for those guards and centers to handle. So I think that's really what's helped this Kansas City Chiefs defense, their commitment to allowing him to play a position that's most comfortable for him, and then having Frank Clark on the other side of that as your edge rusher. You put offensive lines in a bind because – now you can't necessarily just lock in and double team one guy. You're going to cut another guy loose. And so both of those guys have shown the potential to wreck games. And I think with Chris Jones providing the interior push and Frank Clark buzzing off the edge, now quarterbacks are starting to feel the heat from that Kansas City defensive line. And in turn, that makes the back seven that much better.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. So the Chiefs do get a big win, but coming up in about 30 seconds here, why beating the team that Chris and I both liked is the best in the NFL doesn't automatically make you the best team in the NFL. We'll get to that after this word from AT&T. Now, guys, if there are friends and family members you haven't talked to in a while, don't worry. It's never too late to reconnect. To help, AT&T is offering deals on the latest smartphones. It's not complicated. Everybody deserves something new. So AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. Restrictions and exceptions may apply. Visit att.com for details. It is Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, our friend Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio from 7 to 9 Eastern, has started doing a little segment that you and I have both been involved in as voters. He calls it the NFL Playoff Committee, where he takes a poll and a vote of some other hosts on ESPN Radio, some other experts around here, of who the top six teams are in the NFL and votes on them as we would see in the college football playoff rankings committee here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, looking at the last time we did this vote, I voted the Dallas Cowboys for number one. Did you?
Yes, I voted for the Dallas Cowboys as number one, yes.
Yeah, so you and I both voted for the Cowboys as number one, and we hear this conversation all the time about how much does head-to-head matter when you rank these things. And so the Kansas City Chiefs get this win against the Dallas Cowboys, and I look up, and Chris, I've been asked by a million people today, who would you put as the best team in the AFC right now? And even after they went and beat this Cowboys team, Chris, I'm still not ready to say that I think Kansas City is ready to be the class of the AFC yet again.
No, I'm not either. Now, I'm curious as to who you would have up there, but I know who I have, and it's the team that played on Thursday Night Football, the New England Patriots. And I've said this before, Mike, and I think it bears repeating. They're the team that I trust, not just in the conference, but in the entire NFL the most when it comes to week-to-week consistency. I know what I'm getting from the New England Patriots. I know their formula for success, which is going to be that defense, being able to create short fields, field position, steal possessions for that offense, and then that offensive line and that running game being able to manage the game and not put Mac Jones in position where you're asking him to do too much, just a handful of throws every single game, and he's shown that he's capable of making those plays. So that's their formula, and that's what they've been riding on this five-game winning streak, and that's why I trust them the most. So if it comes down to power ranking the teams in the AFC, yeah, the Kansas City Chiefs have all of a sudden been vaulted up there. But I would have them in the top three, but I can't have them in pole position because that belongs to the Patriots.
Yeah, Chris, at this point, you could probably talk me into putting the Kansas City Chiefs at two or three, right? Like, that's where it gets hairy in this conversation. Tennessee taking a massive step back this weekend certainly hurts their chances of being considered. We know they have to overcome a lot perception-wise. But I think you're right about New England because the formula is simple, right? Like, this has always been the argument, I think, from football old heads talking about the way the game is played now. Like, running the football and great defense can put you in a position to make anything close. And when it's close, you got a chance. So, yeah, I'd probably put Kansas City behind them, Chris, because also, how much has really changed about the way they've been going about things, right? The defense got a little bit more production in this last stretch of games here. That has certainly been an uptick. But offensively, in this game against Dallas, Patrick Mahomes averaged 5.4 air yards per attempt, the second lowest of his career, with a game where he's attempted at least 15 passes. And he was pressured on basically half of his dropbacks, 49% of his dropbacks he was pressured on. So that offensive line is still giving it up at this point. And until that changes, Chris, the foundation of this team still scares me too much to bank on.
No, and Pat Mahomes is still giving defenses to Patrick Price when it comes to turnovers. He's still turning the ball over. He's still giving it away. And at some point, that's going to catch up with you. Now, the Chiefs have been riding this win streak, and you know, you can point to the different opponents and the different things that those respective teams have been dealing with at the time the Chiefs played them. But the reality is that, you know, from a competition standpoint, Kansas City hasn't necessarily been tested in the way that we would expect a true contender to when they're getting another team's best punch. And that's the thing that I'm waiting on to see whether or not they're going to be able to withstand that. But when you look at their schedule for the rest of the way, I don't necessarily know if that's going to happen, Gojo. I don't. I mean, going into the bye week, this is a good time to rest up. You get ready for December football. Coming out of it, you've got the Broncos and the Raiders at home, two division opponents. Then you're on the road against the Chargers. And then you got the Steelers. So I don't necessarily know that we're going to see Kansas City be tested in a way where we're going to get real answers as to whether or not they're back to being the scariest team in the National Football League. Right now, I still think that it's the New England Patriots, and the thing that would get me to change my position with Kansas City is to see the strength of that team, which is supposed to be their offense, be as dominant as we've seen them be in the past. Like, I need more, you know, 30-plus point performances from the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, we're just not getting that. In the last month or so, they've only scored north of 20 one time, and that was against the Raiders last week. So that's the thing that I want to see from them. And until I see that, I can't call them one of the most dominant teams in the conference.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Chris. And we're hearing this from the head of the snake on this one. Patrick Mahomes after the game saying as much here. This still isn't our max capacity.
Not playing our best football, and we're sitting here 7-4, at least a half game up on the AFC West. And you go into the bye week knowing you're going to play a lot of divisional opponents coming up. So everything's right in front of us. We can be better, especially offensively. The defense can continue to get better and better each and every week. And to be where we started to where we're at now and still not even playing our best football, I would take that every time.
And I understand that, Chris. It's the reason we can all remain hopeful on this, right? Especially if the defense really is going to continue to buy this offense time. But at some point, as we near week 12 of the season, and we keep saying the offense is going to have to learn to live underneath, they're going to have to rely on the ground game more, and all these things still lead to a ton of pressure for your quarterback and still a very low output, eventually it's going to get to a point where we can't ask them to be something they clearly haven't demonstrated the ability to be.
Yeah, at some point you are what you are. And I think we're getting to that phase of the season where we have to accept who these teams are. Like, I mean, when somebody shows you who they are, you got to believe them. And I feel like with this Chiefs offense, we got to believe that they're going to continue to be turnover prone, because that's what they've done pretty much every single game this season. You're only talking about this team having two games where they haven't turned the football over. And guess what? They won both of those games. So it's no big surprise what they have to do in order to get back to the Chiefs team that's capable of going to back-to-back Super Bowls. That's not what we're looking at right now. And nothing that I saw in Arrowhead yesterday leads me to believe that they're on the path to being able to do that. Now, the flip side of that is you haven't played your best football. It's still right there in front of you. You're most likely going to win your division and have a path to the tournament. So those are all things that bode well for Andy Reid and his bunch. But that offense has got to be able to kick it into high gear, and a part of that is taking care of the football. You shouldn't continue to be sloppy with the football. You shouldn't continue to see some of the mistakes, some of the turnovers. That part has to get fixed. That part has to get cleaned up. Otherwise, you're probably talking about an early exit from them when they're talking about in the playoffs.
Yep. All of this is fun conversation now, but if it ends with the Chiefs with a first-round exit in the postseason, something they haven't been used to in quite some time here, now all of a sudden you have real off-season soul-searching that you get to start to do. But coming up next, man, if we want to talk soul-searching, one AFC team's worst nightmares may slowly be coming true yet again. We'll get to who that is next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
The
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Chris, we get to check in with Baker Mayfield because I, for one, had thought when Odell Beckham Jr. left Cleveland, all of their problems would have magically gone away. So I'm shocked to hear that that is not the case.
From his camp continuing to pop off, it just doesn't seem like that's the right thing to do after the organization decided a couple of weeks ago that they were going to back you when it came to the controversy between two of the most prominent players on the team. But that's not the case. And it just doesn't seem like after a 3-point win over the Detroit Lions, who don't have a win on the season, that you would take that time to start airing grievances. Just doesn't make sense to me, but we got plenty of time to get to that.
Yeah, it's just a slow leak that's starting to look more and more like, you know, those Scooby-Doo memes where the guy takes off the mask like you always see at the end of the episode? Like, it seems like we're taking off the Baker Mayfield mask of this last year to reveal the Baker Mayfield from years 1 and 2 in the NFL that was a little messier than the one that we've got now. So we can get to that coming up here soon. But Chris, we've talked so much about the Patriots, the top of the AFC here. The worst nightmare of the Buffalo Bills and their fans seems to be coming true right now. And again, I shudder to say this too loud as Christine Lisi, who you guys just heard on that SportsCenter update, is to my left, who is a ravenous Bills fan and who has talked. We have talked all leading up to this about how Bills fans had finally thought this was our season, the way that they had ended last year and coming into this year. No Tom Brady, this New England Patriots turnover, a rookie quarterback. Chris, are they now officially the second best team in their division?
Yeah, I think they are. And I know that Bills fans like to break tables while they're tailgating before they go into the stadium. By the time they got back home and they actually saw the final score, pretty sure they wanted to break their televisions. Like, that's how bad it was yesterday. They got embarrassed by a team that had a lot of urgency, that had some desperation, and let's face it, that had a sour taste in their mouth based on how the playoff game ended a year ago. Remember, like that Colts team felt like that goal-to-goal situation at the end of the first half in the wild card game was, you know, the pivotal point, and they wanted to have an opportunity to go up and prove that they were a better team than that Bills offense, than that Bills outfit, and they proved that yesterday, and their offense led the way with Jonathan Taylor having another huge performance, over 200 yards from scrimmage and 5 touchdowns. Like, the dude went beast mode. That offensive line dominated the Bills front seven. And Sean McDermott had no answers, and that was a surprising place to see him because his background is on the defensive side of the ball, and he's usually a guy from an X's and O's standpoint that can find a way to take away your best weapons, and he had no answers for Jonathan Taylor. On Jonathan Taylor's 184 yards rushing, 136 of that came after contact, Gojo, and he had 6 explosive runs. Like, they pretty much just ran the ball at will whenever they wanted to. And the Buffalo Bills defense didn't have any answers. And then the Bills offense couldn't stop turning the ball over. So you couple those things together, and that's how you end up on the wrong side of a 41-15 beatdown.
Yeah, Chris, you mentioned that they were getting it before contact and after contact. The Bills entered the this weekend, allowing the second fewest yards before contact in the NFL. It's like the one O-line-ish stat that lives out there. The Bills came in entering, allowing just 2 yards before contact. The Colts averaged 3.7 before contact on that day, almost double the kind of push that they were getting up front here. And, Chris, I mentioned this last week, that I feel like the Buffalo Bills had been sort of separated from a conversation that we've been having about the Kansas City Chiefs, right? We talked about the Bills' schedule and how, yeah, they put up big-time numbers against teams in their division, against the Dolphins, against a bad Jets team. We asked questions about that, and then we wondered with the good teams what it was going to look like here. This might have been a taste, because you know how we talk about Kansas City getting all that cover two, that two-deep zone where they keep everything in front of them and let nothing behind them? The Kansas City Chiefs see the highest percentage of two deep in the NFL. You know who sees the third highest percentage? The Buffalo Bills. And you know who in this game struggled to go deep in a big way against a quality defense was Josh Allen. 2 of 8 with 2 interceptions on throws 15 yards or more down the field, Chris. Like, as we talk about this being an issue from some of the big play offenses, the Bills are finally going to have their day in court when it comes to this style of defense now affecting this offense against good teams.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is an offense that's volunteering to be one-dimensional. And that's the problem. Like, you need to have more balance, especially knowing that you play in Buffalo with the elements. And that was one of the conversations coming out of last year's playoff game against the Baltimore Ravens, even though they were on the winning side of it, because that was a windy game, because, you know, you really couldn't do a whole lot in the passing game. What was your alternative? What could you turn to in order to be able to sustain drives, in order to be able to move the football? And Buffalo really hadn't found an answer to that part of it. Now, it seemed like they had more of a concerted effort to focus on the run game through the first month, month and a half of the season, because their first five games, they were north of 100 yards rushing. But that has kind of tailed off in terms of their overall commitment to that aspect of it. And when you do that, you just heap more on Josh Allen. And I don't know that you can rely on that to consistently put this team where they want to be, to have this offense in situations where they can exploit some of the looks that they're getting from opposing defenses. Because like you mentioned, if you're getting a lot of shell coverages, then you're going to have to take some of the underneath throws, but you're also going to have to be able to run the football. And they haven't done that to this point this year, and you got exposed by a team that was able to capitalize and sustaining drives by running the football. And I thought that was the best thing that the Colts did yesterday, their commitment to Jonathan Taylor and knowing that good things happen when you give the ball to a guy that's leading the National Football League in yards from scrimmage and in rushing.
Yeah, Chris, you can – I think with every team that we've talked about right now, especially in the AFC, right, your strength has to be good enough. If your strength can't lead the charge, then you're going to have issues. And we have seen with teams able to be successful, like we saw with the New England Patriots and like we've seen with the Colts, they lean on their lines of scrimmage because that is where they built their strength. The Kansas City Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills, built their teams on offense to play from ahead. They built these things to go bombs away. And Chris, as a former D lineman, I mean, look at what they've drafted on the Bills side here. Ed Oliver, AJ Epenesa, Gregory Rousseau this past year. Like, they went after guys that can get after the quarterback and get upfield here. And so now when you get the other version of life, I got to imagine that's a tough adjustment for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, a lot of pass rushers don't want to have to stop the run, but one of the things that we say in the NFL is you have to earn the right to rush the passer, and yesterday the Buffalo Bills didn't do that, and you're not going to be able to get opportunities to affect the opposing team's quarterback unless your front seven does a lot better job of being gapped out, being sound, playing fundamental football, and then also being able to make sure that you tackle. And all of the missed tackles that led to yards after contact, that's just something that you don't see from teams that are true championship contenders. And that's what the Bills fancy themselves as. But based on their body of work, Ojo, and I know this is really a college football phenomenon because we're so focused on the rankings and the college football playoff. But when you look at the resume for the Buffalo Bills, they've only got one win against a team that has a winning record, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. So I don't know how much stock we can put into this team. We expected them to be a championship contender because they made it to the AFC championship game last year, but that's not the same team that we're watching in 2021, and if you think it is, then you got to wake up and pay attention, because the Colts went up to Buffalo and they checked their oil, and guess what we found out? It's on E right now when it comes to the Bills and their toughness. There's no way you can prove yourself to be a tough team. You let the opposing team run for 264 yards. Like, Frank Reich did an interview with Peter King after the game, and after that first possession of the second half where they got a penalty that pushed him out of field goal range, Frank Reich committed to running the ball on first and second down, and the 18 first and second down plays they had from that point on in the game, they ran it on 17. One of the worst feelings in football is when the opposing team is running the ball, you know they're running it, and you can't stop it. That was the position that the Bills front seven was in yesterday, and there was nothing, I mean nothing, that they could do about it. That's an embarrassment, and that's an indictment on what your team can be. Because if your defense can't do any better than that, then there's probably going to be a relatively low ceiling on what this team is going to be in 2021.
No worse feeling than getting moved from point A to point B against your will. That is the issue for the Bills. We want to remind you here at Canty and Golic Jr. to listen to the Man in the Arena podcast, a 10-part series exploring how sports impacts our everyday lives through the lens of Tom Brady's career. Available wherever you get your podcasts and brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. For a mortgage experience you can be a fan of, Rocket can. Coming up next, though, a reminder of why the most dangerous thing for your career can be a close relative with internet access. We'll get to that next here at Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
The
This is ESPN Radio.
Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to Dave McMenamin about LeBron James hitting a guy in the face and that guy getting fined money for it somehow, some way here in about 10 minutes. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. But first, we got to get to some good old-fashioned family business on this thing, Chris, because the Cleveland Browns get a narrow win this weekend against the winless Detroit Lions. And in that process, after the game, we got some words exchanged on social media. So apparently, last night, Baker Mayfield's wife, Emily, shared a post on Instagram that said, "No one better say anything bad about Baker Mayfield after this game. I don't think I have seen tuck this like this in a while. Maybe the rest of our team should take the hint and get tougher." Chris, I don't think that's in the handbook for how to endear yourselves to your teammates and organization in a contract year.
Yeah, I got to think Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are thinking to themselves, can we just have a situation now that we've moved on from the drama of Odell Beckham Jr. where our team seems like they're functional, where our quarterback doesn't do anything to embarrass himself, and by extension, his wife doesn't do anything to embarrass us. I mean, didn't we live this a couple of weeks ago with OBJ's dad putting out that video and then the Cleveland Browns' subsequent action to cut Odell Beckham? Like, why would you want to go down this road if you're Baker Mayfield or anybody in his camp? Because it can't end well. I mean, the shot that she took on his teammates in that post, it's unnecessary, it's uncalled for, and ultimately it doesn't do anything to defend your husband. So it only puts him in a tougher spot because he's got to stand up in front of that locker room and answer for what you said about the rest of those guys, insinuating that somehow, some way, he's tougher than they are. That's the wrong approach to take, especially when you're a player's wife, but especially when you're the quarterback's wife.
Yeah, this is all really not great. Like, Baker Mayfield coming into the NFL was as loud and boisterous as any quarterback that we had seen try and play that position. We had all these conversations about, can you be a quarterback in the NFL at this level, that CEO position, being as outspoken as Baker Mayfield was? Now we're starting to get an interesting answer, because there were the last 2 years where he was pretty quiet after season one and season two, and now it has started to change. Here was Baker Mayfield talking in their press conference today about why he walked off the field immediately after the win against the Lions.
I mean, to our guys, no. To you guys, maybe. Depends on how you want to take it. You're going to write your stories regardless. I mean, my guys know that all I care about is winning, but I'm going to be frustrated if I do stuff to make it harder on us. And I did yesterday, and that's just flat out where it was. But I'm never going to take winning for granted. That's something that's very hard to do in this league. It hadn't been a very common thing around here for a long time. So I'm just frustrated with how I played, and that's how I've always been. They know I'm going to come back and attack this week, and that's how I've always been.
Chris, Baker also was asked about the fans booing him during Sunday's game and said, quote, "Those are probably the same fans that won't be quiet when we're on offense and trying to operate, so I don't really care." Like, this is kind of spiraling a little bit.
No, it is. And the thing that I don't understand is whether it's Emily's post on social media after the game, or it's Baker walking away from the podium or not wanting to talk to the media immediately after the game. There is no win in all of that. For you. You don't win in terms of the messaging. You don't win in the eyes of the media, the fan base, when you don't do your job. And a part of your job is talking to the media, especially after games, if you're the quarterback. You don't win. If you didn't play well, it's an opportunity for you to get in front of it and say, you know what? I didn't play well. I need to be better. We all need to be better. Part of being quarterback is setting the agenda for the entire club, and Baker Mayfield missed an incredible opportunity to do that because he wants to be defensive about his play. And I don't think that's the way that you go about it in terms of leading your locker room. Quarterback by nature is a leadership position. And right now, Baker is falling short of the mark, and his wife is only exacerbating that issue. So, yeah, I don't understand what the win was for Baker yesterday not talking to the media, and I don't understand what the win was by his wife posting on social media about his toughness and insinuating that the rest of his team couldn't match that.
Yeah, Baker and the city of Cleveland felt last summer like a perfect match, and now we seem to start to be fraying at the strings that connect the two. We'll see if that does any damage going forward. But coming up next, LeBron James and Isaiah Stewart did some damage on the court. We'll find out about the fallout next.